Next case is 97-2670, Ohio State Bar Association versus Richard Tucker.
Even if all those robberies came in, this result came down to worse.
That's exactly right.
Hmm?
That's exactly right. Charles, he didn't do it because he was driving his case. He actually got up and admitted guilt because of fraud.
He was sick then, 2 or 3 years ago. He was ill.
He fought Dean and his buddy, carried the same penalty as the principal offender thing, and he didn't. And he said that.
Did you? I really think you should never, I don't care what your client says, you should never admit or that you did anything as far as I'm
concerned. Mr. Hughes.
Look at here. They can approve it.
Yeah, exactly. Look at here.
I've never admitted it. Never.
That's what he told them. That one
dead.
I believe.
Watch your time there on the clock.
This case is about kickbacks and deceits. We can call kickbacks many things. We call payolas, we can call graft, bribes, grease the pond, tickle the pond, put the strings in.
But
it comes down to the same thing. Set the and it's a corruption of the attorney-client relationship. In the case before you, Your Honor, it's not an isolated incident. These kickbacks took place over a period of more than a year. And it continued until they were caught. These kickbacks were paid by the respondent to Mr. Lake, whose corporate counsel was with the company in Cleveland. The record shows the reason they entered into this kickback arrangement, because Mr. Lake and the respondent had handled a personal injury case, missed the statute of limitations, and ended up paying $5,000 to the client in that case. At that point, they decided they believed could finance that $5,000 payment, $2,500 each, and that's how they started this kickback arrangement. But it didn't stop at the $5,000. It continued to involve more than $16,000 a fee. It was calculated, it was intentional, and it was continued until they were, until Mr. Lennon was caught with them. This case also involved fraud. There was obviously an incentive for both Mr. Lang and Mr. Zuckerman to pad bills. Mr. Lang gets half whatever Glidden pays to Mr. Zuckerman. Exhibits 907 and 908 we introduced at the hearing for the panel contains fraudulent billing entries. There are two cases called the A&D case and the Department of Airmen case. Mr. Zuckerman moved through the A&D case like a ghost. There was no tracks. The plaintiff never heard of him. The court record shows no correspondence or filings on his behalf. And Witten's own file in that case shows no correspondence, no memos, no contact with Mr. Zuckerman. And he claims to have handled this case at the same time Mr. Lennie had already hired another Cleveland attorney to handle the case. And the case was a dead case. Hired by Mr. Winnick, Mr. Boyansel, he handled the case quickly, determined that case was going nowhere. He stopped working on the case with Mr. Winnick's permission. Mr. Winnick and Mr. Zuckerman are paying bills a year later on the same case. Mr. Zuckerman billed Witten Company for a telephone call with the plaintiff. We established at the panel that no such telephone call was ever made. Mr. Zuckerman billed Witten for reviewing pleadings in the A&D case, and we established before the panel that there were no pleadings filed for on behalf of Witten by Mr. Zuckerman at any time, nor were there any pleadings filed with the court in the A&D matter at any time when he claimed to have been reviewing pleadings to the file. In the Department of Army matter, it's even more compelling. There was simply nothing to do. In that case, Witten apparently had mistakenly submitted a bid on a Department of Defense contract that was reserved for small companies, 500 employees and less. Witten has about 5,000 employees. The record shows that Witten representative did not Mr. Zuckerman. Shortly thereafter, called Department of Defense, Department of the Army, and said this was a mistake. We withdraw that contract bid. Mr. Zuckerman's billing Witten 2 months later, There was simply nothing to do with that matter.
In that we are not the finders of fact in these cases, typically, I'm not sure how, in terms of our standard of review, how you're asking us to, on what basis would we come to a contrary conclusion than the panel did here in terms of that factual determination, having heard the evidence they say wasn't proved. And I think that your case primarily hinges on your disagreement with that factual determination by the panel. Is that right? So offer to us your view of how we would be permitted to come to a contrary conclusion. Is it manifest weight? What do you say we may do here to contradict the panel's factual finding?
Your Honor, as we indicated in our cite to the Harper decision, the Judge Harper decision, this court is the final determiner of the facts, from both the facts and the law, these proceedings. The panel with a recommendation, this court finds its own facts on these different disciplinary cases. The evidence is in the record to support.
Your evidence, though, I suppose, I mean, if it were testimony and somebody and credibility issues, you wouldn't be asking us to contradict a panel on that sort of thing, would you?
Well, obviously, the court needs to give consideration to the panel's evaluation of credibility and the like, but in this case, the evidence is right there in the record. Factual documents.
Okay, that's the reason why you think we can assess the documentary evidence ourselves in the timing and find that it's primarily the timing issues that would defeat the view that the panel took.
Right. In fact, the panel didn't address any of this evidence. It just said that the Ohio State Bar decision failed to prove it. But even if we look at what the panel did find, which was that there was this kickback, this payments from Mr. Zuckerman to Mr. Winning, we think that the recommended penalty of the public reprimand is simply too lenient. Let's think about what happened here. What happened is they corrupted the gatekeeper for the Glidden Company. Mr. Lennox's role as counsel for the Glidden Company was to determine when it was appropriate for outside work to be referred, was to make sure it went to an appropriate attorney, to review the bills that came in, and make sure the bills being submitted to the Glidden Company were appropriate. Here, they completely corrupted Mr. Lennox's role.
When you say they, who corrupted?
Mr. Lennox and Mr. Zuckerman together corrupted the safeguards that the Glidden Company had in place to prevent exactly this type of practice.
Okay, so the they refers to the two of them.
Correct. Both Mr. Lennox and the respondent, Mr. Zuckerman.
Did you try this case?
Yes, Your Honor, I did.
Given, because I looked at the members of the panel, you have one very experienced appellate judge, you have an experienced trial lawyer, and you have another trial lawyer, an experienced trial lawyer, who dealt mostly in business matters with his firm in Toledo. It looked like a pretty good panel. And the panel said you didn't prove the A&D matter in the Department of the Army. Now, I've reviewed all that evidence that you've talked about, all those witnesses and the billings and the pleadings and the docket. And you're right, it's all there. Why didn't they find it? And what would you do differently if you had to try the case over again? I mean, just sitting here amazed. And when I read this, I thought, how could they just dismiss this charge and say there was nothing there? Something had to happen, because those are all experienced people.
You're right, Justice Douglas. We were shocked at the outcome. two reasons. One, it seemed to us that the clearance of this evidence of violations is right there in the record. It's also, in addition, Justice, we believe that Mr. Zuckerman's got several contradictions in his testimony regarding exactly that case.
Yeah, I understand all the evidence and the fact. What would you do differently?
I don't know that I'd do anything different, Justice. I would present the same evidence in the same way. To answer your question more directly, the only thing that we have been able to, as the parties who tried the case, to determine is that perhaps because of the volume of the records and the need to go into great detail, that some of that was lost in the volume of the evidence, or the mitigation evidence was given too great weight.
Are you indicating at all that maybe the panel didn't do its thorough job?
I think, Your Honor, when they say simply that we failed to prove our point without addressing further the volumes of evidence and the testimony presented, yes, Your Honor, I think they did not do a thorough job. I'd like to reserve that any balance my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Hughes. And Ms. Sabella.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'm Mary L. Sabella, and I represent Richard Zuckerman, the respondent in this case. We're here before you today because of two questions that have been posed to you by the Ohio State Bar Association. The first question, as I frame it, is did the relator prove by clear and convincing evidence, that was their burden of proof in this case, that in fact Mr. Zuckerman engaged in dishonesty, fraud, deceit, fraudulent buildings for legal fees? I submit to you that they, in fact, did not prove that. And as I go through the evidence and the testimony, I believe that I can prove to you the same thing that I proved to the panel, and that is that they did not meet their burden of proof. The second question before you today is a public reprimand the appropriate sanction given all the facts and circumstances of the present case? And I submit to you the answer to that question is yes. And as I move through everything, I think that answer will become more apparent to you.
You'll get directly to the Billings question.
Yes.
That's the one that concerned me. The Billings were there, and there was nothing to back them up.
Well, Your Honor, I would submit to you that, in fact, there are copies of Mr. Zuckerman's files in the evidence, and you will find those files at Exhibits 902. That is the A and D file, and contained within the A and D file at base numbered pages H00348 through H00405, you will find the pleadings that Mr. Zuckerman reviewed in the A&D case. I submit to you that information is contained within the file, but is still within his possession. He, in fact, reviewed them as he testified that he, in fact, reviewed.
Yeah, I understand all of that, and
yes,
obviously that's a he said, they said something.
Yes,
specifically, the one that caught my attention was he billed for talking to plaintiff's counsel, and their plaintiff's counsel says, I never talked to him.
Yes, Your Honor.
What about that one?
I think that could be explained, Your Honor, by Mr. Zuckerman's testimony that he spoke with Mr. Marcus Castillo, who was one of the five members of the A&D case was a bankruptcy case.
Mm-hmm.
And as I understand bankruptcy case, and please bear with me because I'm not a bankruptcy lawyer, but my understanding is that there's a creditors committee because of the volume of the case, and there was some 90 or 100 different parties involved in this case. Mr. Castillo was one of the members of that five-person panel, and Mr. Zuckerman spoke with Mr. Castillo. Now, perhaps the use of the word plaintiff was inappropriate because, at least as I understand it, Mr. Castillo was one of the other creditors, perhaps not necessarily the plaintiff in the case, but he was one of the opposing counsel. He was someone other than Glidden's counsel to whom Mr. Zuckerman spoke concerning the case. And with respect to the services that were performed, look closely at the billings for Mr. Belanceau, and you will see that the bulk of the services performed by Mr. Belanceau was in 1993. The services performed by Mr. Zuckerman were in 1994 and 1995. The case, as Mr. Belanceau testified, was still active as of October of 1995. So the case was still ongoing. It was active. And And Mr. Belanceau even testified, he's the first lawyer in the AMD case, that after he gave Mr. Zuckerman his interpretation, that in fact Glidden would not be able to recover $10,000 claim, that Mr. Linick was concerned about that. And I think it's only prudent to seek a second opinion, ask another lawyer. In questioning by Mr. Esch, Mr. Belanceau indicated that in fact, this was the first case Mr. Belanceau had ever handled for Glidden. It was the first time that Mr. Linick really had any experience with Mr. Belanceau. Originally, Mr. Belanceau indicated that it was a good case, he thought the claim would recover some money, and then somewhere in the case, he said no. So, Mr. Linick sought a second opinion. That was that of Mr. Zuckerman, who had performed services around the same period of time in another number of other cases, all of which the Bar Association stipulated that Mr. Zuckerman had, in fact, performed all of those legal services. And out of all the cases, we're only talking about two.
Do we know, Ms. Sabell, do we know in this case, David Linick apparently was fired by Glidden. Do we know why, in this record, why he was fired?
I can tell you my understanding, Your Honor, why he was fired. He was called into a meeting with Mr. Lachitsky, who was the then general counsel and a personnel person. Mr. Linick willingly disclosed to them the monies that were paid to him by Mr. Zuckerman and several other persons, and it was at that point in time that he was discharged.
So, the other case, Linnigan, they also filed disciplinary action against him, I guess. Did Glidden also file disciplinary action against Mr. Linick?
My understanding is Glidden only filed agreements against Mr. Linick with the Office of Disciplinary Counsel. My client was actually contacted originally by the Office of Disciplinary Counsel as a witness in Mr. Linick's case. And at that point in time, he willingly disclosed and gave to the Office of Disciplinary Counsel his complete files, all of his billing statements, as well as copies of the checks that he used to pay Mr. Linick.
Do you represent Mr. Linick also?
No, Your Honor.
I guess I'm wondering, these cases seem to be fairly connected, obviously. And I'm wondering if we should be making a decision on this case until we hear what Glidden has to say about Mr. Linick in his case. In that case, it might help us understand exactly what went on here, since this is one of the briefest reports I've seen from the panel. I mean, it really doesn't tell us. You've done a good job of trying to explain it for the panel, but it doesn't tell us, doesn't answer some of these questions that seem to be, as Justice Douglas raised and I had. It doesn't seem to answer the questions that the misrepresentation issues just don't seem to be answered in the panel's report. I guess, what's your thought about that?
Well, Your Honor, perhaps it's just my position as a defense counsel, but I would suggest that each disciplinary case should in fact be considered on its own merits, and to paint a brush with respect to multiple people, I think would be a grave concern to me. And I would submit that whatever Mr. Zuckerman did or did not do is Mr. Zuckerman's actions and not necessarily tied to something else that Mr. Clinton may have done.
I think that's an excellent answer. I guess my concern is that if we find something in the Linick case that tells, for instance, Linick gets a year suspension, for example, for the same sort of conduct, and we have facts that clarify what happened in this case, there'd be some unfairness if we were to give your client a public reprimand, for example.
Well, if I may respond, Your Honor, I think the fact that the case is different. When you look at the record, look at Mr. Linick's testimony, Mr. Linick indicated that he approached my client and suggested that my client remit monies to him. And I would also submit that my client, in fact, performed all of the legal services for Glidden. Glidden received the full value of the services performed by my client. What my client did was stupid. It was a mistake. But he took the money out of his pocket, and he gave it to Mr. Linick after he earned it. That was wrong. He knew it was wrong. He told disciplinary counsel and gave, quite frankly, he gave them the evidence to prosecute, knowing that when he did that, that was going to be the likely outcome of this case. But he stepped forward and he said, here's what I did. Do whatever you need to do.
We've talked about the A&D case,
yes,
you responded thoroughly and adequately to that. What about the Department of Army case? When I reviewed that docket sheet, it appeared there was nothing at all that Glidden already knew that they had made a mistake with regard to the bid, and the Department of Army had given Glidden all that information. What did the two of them do for the fee?
What Mr. Zuckerman did, Your Honor, is he reviewed the documentation, and the concern as to what would the ramifications be to the Glidden Company for holding themselves out as a small business when in fact they were not. There were 4,700 employees, and if you look at the Department of the Army case, there's actually two documents. There were two times that the Glidden Company held itself out as a small business and were awarded two different contracts, and it took the two entities, an L&S Painting Service and a Sitesil Company, to file objections to the determination of the Small Business Administration to be worthy of that contract.
So in other words, he wasn't really concerned about this particular contract. He was concerned about the overall liability that the company might have by virtue of the federal law by making an application it wasn't entitled to make.
Yes, Your Honor. And
okay.
That
makes sense.
On page 119 and 120 of the transcript, that his concern was with respect to Glidden's future dealings with the Department of the Army, having already made these particular
mistakes.
Representations to the, and I would suggest to you, if you actually look at Bates numbers, page H00447, in that document, the gentleman from Small Business Administration says that penalties may be imposed for false certification of size status under section 16D of the Small Business Administration Act, which is 645D.
Well, that's clearly the law, and that's why your explanation makes sense to me, because you really do try to prevent the client from getting into further trouble, not necessarily get them out of what they're in.
That's right.
Is your last position then, is it fair to say that if you strip away the A&D case and the Department of Army case, that leaves us with a dumb or a stupid thing that he did, and certainly something that is an ethical violation?
Yes, Your Honor.
Splitting fees.
Yes,
Counsel, that's, I think you pretty much can sum it up now. What is it that you agree with this morning?
We indicate that he did, or the acts that he did wrong, Your Honor, is that in fact he took money that he had earned from clients and gave it to Mr. Zuckerman without disclosure under the requirements of DR-2107A, because he divided the fee with a lawyer who was not in his firm without a clear disclosure to the client. And when I say disclosure to the client, let me put that in context, if I may.
This was not Glidden work, this was other work?
No, Your Honor, this was Glidden work.
This was all Glidden work.
But if I may address the disclosure issue.
Yeah. Before you do,
yes,
did Mr. Lennox do performance services?
Yes, Your Honor. He consulted Mr. Zuckerman. He gave advice to Mr. Zuckerman.
On Glidden work only?
Yes. Well, they also had co-counseled on other cases through Mr. Lennox's private practice. Mr. Lennox, as I understand it, had a small private practice outside of his full-time work at Glidden.
Had that arrangement existed before your client took on the Glidden work?
Yes, Your Honor. They had been co-counseling cases prior to.
So they had been doing that and not being on ethical in those transactions?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yeah. And then along came Glidden work?
Yes, Your Honor.
Along with the suggestion, I'd like a, from Mr. Lennox, I'd like a fee split.
There was an original suggestion, there was an original payment, and quite frankly, my client just continued to pay because no one ever told him that he shouldn't, and Mr. Lennox continued to accept the jobs.
Was Mr. Lennox referring clients to your client before that settlement that they had to give to their client, the private practice side?
He was referring his private practice clients to my client, but he had not referred Glidden cases to my client until the malpractice.
But the argument, as you know, is that that's why the referrals occurred, because they had malpracticed in their private practice, and so to cover, to make up that, they began to, Linick began to give Glidden work to your client. That's, the board did find that to be a fact, I think, that it did not.
If I might just briefly address the disclosure issue, so it not be misconstrued to be any type of fraud or deceit or dishonesty. Mr. Lipisky, who was the then general counsel of Glidden, testified that in fact, Mr. Linick was authorized by Glidden to retain outside counsel, authorized to review the billings of outside counsel, and authorized to pay outside counsel. So, in the mind of my client, Mr. Linick was Glidden. All the dealings that he had for the most part with Glidden were through Mr. Linick.
Was there any indication?
Mr. Linick clearly knew what was going on.
Was there any indication of overpricing? In other words, that Lenny dished out this work while your clients charge double the going rate or whatever.
The rate that was charged, Your Honor, was $150 an hour, and I can submit that that is an average hourly rate for a lawyer in the Cleveland area.
Was that typical for what Glidden was paying for outside counsel?
My understanding is that Mr. Galanzo, who also had done some work in the Andy cabinetry case, charged a light rate or a similar rate.
Thank you, Ms. Bell. Mr. Hughes, you've saved a little over 4 minutes of your time.
Let me address a couple of points that came up. Mr. Wink was his buyer, that is in the transfer. Mr. Lipisky, who was a supervising attorney, would explain that when they discovered this kickback scheme, they confided Mr. Wink, he indicated he paid kickbacks to two attorneys. It was immediately terminated. They discovered the kickback scheme because one of the executives at Glidden noticed that the attorney bills related to the other attorney were getting out of hand, and he was wondering why the work was being referred out to Glidden that should have been done by Mr. Wink. Counsel for respondent says that Glidden received full service for the value of paid, and Mr. Smith did not. Glidden was damaged in three ways by this kickback scheme. One, its dependence and trust of the client, Glidden, in the respondent was violated. Two, Glidden's trust in its in-house counsel to serve as a monitor and guard for the corporation's checkbook or outside counsel was violated and suborned by this kickback scheme. And three,
that's true, but isn't that the problem? Complaint against the in-house counsel rather than mediator? Or did you present evidence that Zuckerman initiated this? This was his idea that he seduced inside counsel.
Your Honor, we introduced evidence that empty after they paid out, had the malpractice against $5,000, two of them,
there's one.
According to Mr. Lipisky's testimony, came up with this scheme. And Mr. Zuckerman, he can't have it both ways. He can't, in mitigation, say that he's turned over 25 years and 80,000 cases. I'd say you shouldn't penalize me. At the same time, he knew, as an experienced attorney, that this was wrong. This is a kickback claim.
I understood that hanging on, bad conduct that someone else decides to engage in. And these guys own bad conduct here. Did you say there was another individual involved with Mr. Lipisky as well?
That's correct. And then there was also a disciplinary case pending against that individual.
Would that be somewhat of an indication that Lenick is the principal in terms of coming up with this scheme?
Your Honor, I submit that it's irrelevant who came up with the scheme. If court, the respondent participated.
Well, I understand that, but I thought part of your argument was that that Zuckerman should be punished for leading, letting down Primrose Path.
Not necessarily leading down Primrose Path, but participating in an arrangement that he knows is wrong.
Well, I understand that.
Right.
Yeah.
He participated, knowingly participated in.
What was the third way in which, I think you had, you cited two, the third way?
And I also submit, Your Honor, the third way was they committed, they converted with his money.
And what's the strongest evidence on that? That's where we have this factual difference about whether respondent did the work or not.
No, Your Honor. What I'm submitting to is if you have a pattern of the respondent giving 50% of the fee back to Mr. Lane, then he's essentially granting a discount 50% of the fees, that should have gone to Glidden. That's Glidden's money. And in fact, Glidden has demanded from Linick that he pay all that money back to the corporation. That was the corporation's money if there was going to be a discount. It should have been disclosed, it should have been discussed, so that all parties were aware of what was happening. Your Honor, I submit the attorneys from Ohio look to this court for guidance on ethics and professionalism. And we submit that a public reprimand of conduct calculated, prolonged, intentional conduct such as seen in this case is simply not sufficient to send the proper message to the attorneys in this state. We would ask that the submit that a suspension is the only appropriate punishment in this system in this case.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. We'll take a brief recess.